Today's episode of the Inside EVs podcast is brought to you by E-Range EV Tyre. E-Range EV tyres are specifically engineered for electric vehicles. Using an advanced manufacturing process called liquid phase mixing, E-Range EV's EcoPoint 3 technology creates a tyre with lower rolling resistance and longer range, while offering low levels of wear and high grip. All this while staying affordable. Go to erangetyres.com. That's E-R-A-N-G-E-Tyres.com to find your EV's next set of tyres.
Hello and welcome to the Inside EVs podcast for April the 21st, 2023. This is episode number 159. Thanks for joining us. On today's show, we'll be talking about the debut of the Volkswagen ID.7, the freshly revealed Polestar 4, and the EVs eligible for the IRA tax credit. So, and of course, much, much more. I'm Dominic Yoni, Inside EVs editor and forum moderator. Joining us today is the fastidious Mr. Tom Malogny, senior editor at Inside EVs and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge. We also have the Michelangelesque Mr. Martin Lee from the EV News Daily podcast, which is available on all the best podcast platforms. And of course, Kyle Connor joins us from the majestic Pratik Palatial Halls of Autospec Studios. There he is, where he produces high voltage videos for a growing number of YouTube channels. So welcome, everybody.
Good morning.
Hey, guys.
Morning.
Good morning. All right. So I guess let's kick this thing off with what we've been driving this week and get to some news. So, Tom, I guess let's start with you. So I understand that you have a little personal vehicle news for us this morning.
Yeah.
So take it away.
I'll jump in. So, you know, I talked about how I decided I was going to sell the R1T a few weeks ago on the show. I did that. A good friend of mine had told me, if you ever want to sell this, you know, just call me. Don't even put it for sale anywhere. And I did that last week to make room for a new vehicle in my driveway, which is the Rivian R1S. Not a big surprise, because again, I talked to that on the show quite a few times. I had ordered both vehicles a long time ago and figured I could always cancel the deposit if I don't want them. When I decided that I preferred to keep the Lightning as my pickup truck, because I was really, I know a lot of people say, you know, you probably had your mind made up ahead of time. I didn't at all. I think my mind kind of got made up pretty quickly, but once I got the vehicles, I really didn't know which one I was going to keep. And the Lightning is just a better fit for me as a truck. It's a better pickup truck. It's a better work truck. The Rivian's an awesome adventure vehicle. I loved my R1T. It is unbelievable. I liked it so much that, you know, while I didn't keep it for a pickup truck, I bought the SUV version of it. So I have a Rivian R1S now, same color combo, forest green, ocean coast interior, which I think looks great. And the only difference is, as you could see, I have the 21-inch road tires. And on the R1T, I bought the 20-inch all-terrain tires. So that's pretty much the only difference. Everything else is, I mean, you know, I don't feel like I got a new vehicle, which is, you know, weird. Yeah, I almost thought about getting it in a different color just so it would feel like a new vehicle. I was thinking about doing it in the limestone, but when it came down to it, I liked the forest green the most. And I said, you know, that's what I like. That's why I got the R1T in the forest green. So yeah, there it is right there. And it's, you know, it's very familiar. It's a very cool vehicle. Unfortunately, I haven't driven it yet. I got it on Wednesday, and I think I put like 12 miles on it in 2 days. Because I have the Mustang Mach-E here this week on loan from Ford, and you've got to take every opportunity to drive the vehicles when you get them on loan. Yeah. I get the vehicles for like 7 days. Sometimes Kyle's lucky. He gets some longer-term loans. But I typically get a 7-day loan, and you always lose 1 or 2 days because of weather or just something you have to do with your family. So every minute that I can, I'm driving it. And I put, I think, 960 miles on it this week. So I drove it to New York, to Pennsylvania, to Delaware. I did the Inside EV 70-mile-an-hour highway range test. That's the inside. For those of you watching on YouTube, this is the inside of the R1. S, and I popped down the third row seats over there.
Ooh, so, nice.
Yeah, we'll have a lot of opportunity to talk about the R1S and upcoming shows, and I'll be making lots of videos on it and so forth. So I'm excited about it. I like it a lot. Little disappointed that, you know, Rivian switched from the Meridian sound system to their own in-house sound system. Now it sounds pretty good. I'll admit. So I'm gonna give it some time. But the Meridian system was awesome. You know, it was one of, if not the best sound systems I've ever had in any vehicle I've ever owned. But now, to cut costs, they're not using the Meridian system. They've engineered in their own system, and I don't have enough time with it yet. I know other owners have complained, but to me, it sounded pretty good in the 12 miles, I think, that I've driven the car. Yeah.
And the sound system still has to break in a little bit. And also, I've noticed R1S sounds maybe slightly worse than R1T, just because same subwoofer, bigger cabin. That's what it feels like to me.
Yeah. Right. So, you know, we'll see. It's definitely not, you know, I used it. That was one of the first things I checked, just to see if it made a big difference. It didn't seem to make a big difference to me in a short period of time. So I'm going to be happy with it, I think, but I'll do some more testing to see, you know, if it really is that much less than the Meridian system, which, as I said, was freaking awesome. So so I have Naki this week, did the Inside EV 70 mile an hour highway range test.
Okay.
That video is going to be up on Inside EVs tomorrow. I'm not going to reveal the results. When I do my videos for my channel, State of Charge, I don't mind telling you guys the results, but I don't know how Inside EVs feels about me revealing it before it goes live. So I'm not going to talk about that. I will say it did very well. Mach-Es seem to do pretty well on highway range tests. I think Kyle has the same experience. The last time I did one with the Mach-E all-wheel drive extended range battery pack back 2 years ago, it went 285 miles, which it outperformed its EPA combined range rating. And I will say that this time it performed very similarly. But you'll have to watch the video tomorrow. It's going to be up on Inside EVs tomorrow. And it did, as far as I'm concerned, it did very, very good. In its class, you know, if you're going to look at the other vehicles that it's compared to, say, other than a Model Y, it probably has the longest range. So, you know, at least real-world driving range that I've observed.
Okay.
So in that regards, it's good. On the other hand, I did DC fast charge recordings. I was interested in this because I know Ford has massage the charging curve since I did my last charge recordings 2 years ago, you know, the spring, I think, of 2021, when the vehicle first came out, I did a bunch of charge recordings. It's never charged well, but I thought that Ford had improved the charging curve. That's not what I'm seeing. I've DC fast charged it 3 times now, and it on different charging stations, and it did not improve at all. You know, I haven't analyzed it and compared it to the previous charging sessions, but off the top of my head, memory wise, I might have done worse. Kyle, have you charged one recently?
Not really. The one that we had, I didn't spend that much time with charging. My understanding from the charging curve perspective is it's pretty much the same down low, but the 80% drop should be better with new software. That's, you know, and then maybe the 100%, because it used to drop to 12 kilowatts at 80. Now it does 40. And that's, as far as I understand, the only improvement they've made.
So from what I saw, yes, it charged much better from 80 to 90 or even to 95%. It definitely, because it used to fall off a cliff, as somebody posted there. And now it does charge a lot better. But, you know, and I need to really compare it to my old video, but the 20 to 80, to me, I think it took longer than the last time in all of the sessions that I've recorded. But I could be misremembering. Maybe I didn't remember how bad it was. I think it took me 54 minutes to get to 80% from dead zero.
Yep, that sounds about right.
I thought it did it in like 48-ish, but I'll see when I compare. In any event,
I remember it was like an hour to 80 and then another hour or another hour and a half to 100 from 80.
That you know, that could be the case. Maybe I just don't remember because it's been so long, and I'm not used to cars taking an hour to get to 80% anymore. You know, most, right. You know, a lot of the EVs, somehow they figure out a way to get to 100% in an hour, you know, and almost everybody out there now is saying, you know, 10 to 80 in 30 or 35 minutes, you know, and I forgot that the Mach-E really was always a not a very good DC fast charging video, but I'm going to compare it to my old charging graph. I'm going to put all the data on one graph and we'll see exactly where it is. But because it charged so poorly, in my opinion, I went and did it three times on different stations because I'm like, well, maybe this station, you can't trust the stations. You can't trust that they're delivering full power. So in any event, you know, I know it maxes out at 115, Kyle, but my previous recordings, and I thought maybe I'm just forgetting, I thought, you know how Ford gives you that initial boost, that it went up over 115 and then it settled down at 115 for a while. That's not what happened with this car. I was getting 115 for the boost, and within 10 or 15 minutes, it was down below 100 kilowatts.
Are you sure you don't have the small battery?
No.
Okay. That would be the only explanation. Yeah. Because
If I did, the small battery goes close to 300 miles at 70 miles an hour. So Ford's done something pretty good with the small battery.
Yeah. But did you only charge on Signet branded chargers?
Yes. That's all around here.
Yep. Well, there's your answer. So the Signets have failing power modules and they're not outputting full current. And so they're all in a derated state. So
that's why I went to three different units.
Yeah. But they did it to every Signet.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that sucks. That's what I remember. You see what Martin just put up? The initial boost up around 150 for you only get it for 3 minutes, and then it would drop down and hang at like 115 for a while. Take that whole charging curve now and just push it down, you know, a quarter of an inch, and that's what I basically saw. Except at the end, you see how 80% it falls off a cliff? Doesn't do that anymore. Now it only goes halfway down the cliff. You know,
that's not like a fault of the car. That's just our garbage infrastructure.
But you know, it's tough to communicate that. I'm still going to make the video, but I will talk about that in the video. So, I wish I had an opportunity to I really should have. I'm one of these. I should have went to the EVgo station. I wasn't thinking about that, but
your station, Thomas.
Yeah, I know. But you know, the last time I went there, I blew a module or something because halfway into the charge, it just dropped down to nothing. Tom let me down. I don't even know if they fixed it yet. I have to go figure that out, but we're getting this with all the networks. You know, it's not, we beat up Electro-America a lot because they're the biggest network. They're all over the place. They're what's out there. That's what we use. That's what, you know, and to be honest with you, they were, you know, they did this because they were penalized and ordered to do it. It's not like they decided they wanted to make a charging network. So the least they could do is make the damn things work. But any event, so that's it with the Mach-E. Oh, and the reason why I got it was for Blue Cruise 1.2.
Right.
I've been driving the vehicle all week, really, in Blue Cruise mode. Now, Ford is pushing out their latest version of Blue Cruise 1.2. Kyle did a great video of him on the Hogback. Go to Out of Spec Reviews. Check out his video. It's like an hour long, much more in depth than what I did. My video more is explaining what it does and what it's supposed to do than it is showing an hour of me driving it and everything. Of course, I have clips of me driving it, and I ran into one kind of an interesting situation in a construction zone where it was just going to plow into a divider without any notice, warning, or anything, and I had to just pull it to the right quickly, you know, to avoid that. With Blue Cruise 1.2, Ford's made a bunch of improvements. There's three main improvements. Lane change assist. When you use the blinker, it doesn't do it on itself like Super Cruise can. When you use the blinker and it decides it's safe to execute a lane change, it will. And it does it incredibly smoothly and intuitively like a human. You know, it accelerates into the other lane like you would when you're going into the other lane. You don't slow down and, you know, another car's coming up on your butt, you know. So it really mimicked how I think I would make lane change. Super impressed with that. Second one is predictive speed assist. So predictive speed assist does a couple of things. Some of them are good, some of them aren't, in my opinion. The one thing that I like about it is if you're coming up to a big winding bend in the road and you're traveling at high speeds, you're on a highway, it knows that the bend is there because these are pre-mapped roads.
Right.
And it will slow the car down. Let's say you have the cruise control set to 80 miles an hour and it feels like that big winding turn is going to be a little tight for it at 80 miles an hour. It'll drop down your speed. Cool. Until you've executed, take it back up to the 80 miles an hour that you have. That's one of the things it does. Another one of the things it does that I really don't like is it will lower your speed according to the posted speed. So
sure,
it won't do it if you get on a highway and it's 65 miles an hour highway and you set it to say 70 miles an hour, it'll hold 70. But what happens when you're driving through construction zones, even if they're construction zones, there's no active construction because they work at night. But they still have the temporary signs up. It picks up that sign and it knocks your speed down. So I was driving, I was doing this on the 70 mile an hour highway range test. And all of a sudden I felt the car slowing down and I'm like, what the hell? And I look and I'm like, it's set to 60 now. So I bump it back up. 5 minutes later, I'm slowing down again. I have to put it up to 60. And I realize you've got to go in the settings and it allows you to set how much higher than the posted speed limit it will go. So I just pushed it up and, you know, to 20 miles over. So it won't adjust me down no matter what happens. And I didn't like that. I didn't like that the vehicle will slow you down because I became an obstacle on the road. First of all, driving 70 miles an hour on the New Jersey Turnpike, I'm already almost an obstacle, you know, and then it goes down to 60 without really realizing it, you know, and I don't like that feature. I think that needs to be massaged a little bit. And the third feature is in-lane repositioning, which is pretty cool. And, you know, it's something that, you know, I never really thought of that, you know, an ADAS system would do, but it works really well and it's cool. What it does is if you're in Blue Cruise and there's a vehicle next to you that's kind of drifting a little close to you, it will push you over. It'll scoot you over to the side of your lane. It won't change the lane. And it doesn't just do it for tractor trailers, which I would think that's really, because they're very big and intimidating when a big tractor trailer's next to you and then it gets caught in the wind and it wanders close to you, you know, and you're kind of like looking over. What it'll do is it just pushes you over all the way to the side of your lane. It keeps you in your lane, but it gives you an extra 2-3 feet, you know, of breathing room. And it does that very intuitively. You don't even realize it's happening, but it's kind of one of those things that it'll relieve the stress of driving without you knowing it's doing it, just by you pushing a little bit away from that vehicle. And it does it. You don't have to be on top of the vehicle to do it. It'll see if the truck or car ahead of you is close to the lane that you're going in, that and you're going to pass this vehicle, before you even reach it, it will scoot you over. So you'll kind of go around it. So I think it works really well. And also noticeably less ping ponging in the lane than my Lightning. Now, I don't know if that's an improvement of Blue Cruise 1.2, or if it's just that the Lightning's this big boxy vehicle that can get blown around and bounced around. And the Mach-E is lower and more aerodynamic, and maybe it doesn't wander as much as my Lightning does anyway. But that's one of the things I'm not pleased about with the Lightning's Blue Cruise. I like the hands-free Blue Cruise. I use it all the time, but it does ping pong a lot in the lane. And hopefully when I get 1.2 update, which should be later on this year, hopefully that's a little bit more steady. But the Mach-E was pretty rock solid and steady. It did very little lane wandering.
Nice. That sounds pretty cool. So this week you also put up a post discussing customer education by Ford Pro about towing with your F-150 Lightning, a vehicle you also own. So I was just wondering if you could tell us maybe what the big takeaway is here, just briefly.
Yeah. So the interesting thing about this was I was the only one that got this story. I talked to Ford a little bit about towing and so forth at the New York Auto Show. And they had said, yeah, we're actually Ford Pro, not Ford proper. Ford Pro is putting together a guide for their dealers and their the customers to help them better understand towing and range effect by temperature. And they're like, yeah, we spent a lot of time, we put a lot of effort into really trying to help people understand you know, that the vehicle can tow. It's just there are certain challenges for it, but we don't want all of our pro customers to watch YouTube videos of somebody saying, look, the thing only went 50 miles. And then, right. you know, they say, oh, geez, that doesn't work for me. So they spend a lot of time figuring or testing with all different size trailers and different weights. And, you know, something that's no surprise to people that understand this stuff, Kyle, particularly, the weight doesn't have that much of an effect on the range. It really doesn't. Maybe if you're pulling up mountains, it would. But and even the trailer, the big thing is the aero of the trailer. You know, that's the big thing. And so they spent a lot of time, put a lot of effort into showing how, what type of trailer, how much range you could expect to lose. And then they also did this with different temperatures. So they put a lot of effort into, it's kind of like if you're a Ford Pro customer and you want to start to integrate Lightnings into your fleets, and you know you're going to tow, and you know you're going to be driving in different temperatures, get this, download this guide that they made, spend a couple of hours sifting through it, reading it, understanding all the stuff. And then that's really what you should be following. Not, you know, quite honestly, Tom Allegheny on YouTube or somebody else, because this is like scientific data that they did, you know, it. And so I think they did a nice job. I read the whole thing and they did a really good comprehensive job, and it really will help the pro customers understand what the Lightning can do, what it can't do. And quite honestly, what they found, and they know their customers, they know their customers' use cases, they know how many miles their customers drive, how many miles their customers tow. They've got millions of miles of data. And the fact of the matter is a very high percentage of Ford Pro customers could transition out of a gas or diesel Ford F-150 into a Lightning, and it would more than satisfy their needs. There's a very small percentage of their customers that the data of the telematics show that the Lightning wouldn't be the right choice for them. Right. So, you know, that's the, and this, you know, this whole education thing is going to be super important moving forward to help people better understand what the best vehicle for their task is, you know, and people just don't understand it yet, because this is all new stuff to everybody.
Right. Okay, cool. Well, thanks for that. So, hey, Kyle, I understand that so you've had a week that's a little crazier than even usual. So I see you posted on Twitter a picture of a Polestar 1 with a Lucid Air outside the Red Ball Garage in New York City, and then the same two cars at 260 Portofino Way in Redondo Beach, California. So this, of course, is the traditional starting and end points for a cannonball run. So want to tell us a little bit about it, starting with maybe the Polestar 1 and how you got it, if you're allowed to say.
Yeah, I want to tell the full story, but we're not just ready to say yet.
Okay.
So yep, you know, that's your teaser. New York to LA, Lucid Air run with the advantage of a Polestar 1. Perhaps someone can figure out why. Also want to say a big thank you to Tom and his friend Greg for helping, but we're not quite ready to tell the story. Probably tonight or tomorrow the video will go up, so you'll have to wait just a few more hours for us to share the full situation.
Okay. So, okay. Well,
yeah, sorry. I don't mean to be disappointing, but we're just
going right.
to the video to go before we
didn't talk
everything. But
just so our viewers know, we didn't discuss what we were talking about this morning before we're talking about. I just saw this and I'm throwing it out there.
Fine. I mean, you can see that happened, and yes, yeah. We drove across the country and it was epic, and that's all we can say at the moment. But
well, you put up another post.
We you know, the only reason that I'm really trying this is we typically like spill the beans on everything. This right. is like something we put so much time and effort into. We tried so hard, and I just want to wait for the video to go out so everyone can see the full situation before we, you know, talk about it.
And yeah, and sorry I couldn't take part. I had stuff this week. I couldn't join y'all, which would have been awesome. But all right,
Kyle, I have a few things for you. What do you want me to do? Google Drive or?
Yeah, Google Drive works great. Okay. If you just
I should have done it already. I totally forgot.
Yep, because that'll all go into the video that we'll try and put up for tomorrow.
Okay. Right on. Yeah. So that's how stuff gets done. Just, yep. So, but you did have another video on, or video, another tweet up with a little bit more information, I guess. So basically we know that you drove. Yeah. It's got the two pictures. We drove 2,833.9 miles. That's a heck of a trip. And it has your energy usage as well, which I was really surprised at that. I thought it would be a higher energy usage than that, but
we'll
have the whole
the video.
Yeah, we'll get all the yeah.
Yep.
I know. Okay.
Kyle doesn't want to talk about this, Dom. I'll talk a little bit more about my R1S for a second.
No, it's okay.
So what I did do was when I got the R1S, I don't know if you remember when I got the R1T, I did a handover video where Rivian delivers the vehicles to you if you ask for them. And I had the person who delivered it to me, her name was Sade, did an awesome job. So I asked Rivian again, I said, can we do a delivery video with the R1S, go over all the features? A lot of things are different. The last one seemed to go really well. They said, yeah, sure, no problem. So I figured they were going to send Sade again because everybody said she was a rock star in the comments and everything. And she was, she did an awesome job, but somebody else showed up, a guy named Anthony. And he also did a fantastic job. So that's a video that's going to be coming out on a State of Charge probably this week coming up, where we go over all the features, walk around. It's well more longer than an hour because we go through everything on the truck. So if people are interested in the R1S, that video is going to be coming up soon. That's how they deliver it. Most people like to go to a Rivian delivery center to pick them up, but I live like 50 miles from the Brooklyn Center, and it's such a PIA to get to Brooklyn. So, I said, nah, deliver it out to me, and they'll do that if you need it. And it comes on a flatbed like that. And then they go over all the features, and that's what we did. And it's pretty cool. I will say there's a funny point in the video where Rivian forgot something. So I'll play Kyle, and I'll just tease you, and you're going to have to watch the video to find out what happened. But the guy was a little embarrassed when we realized what had happened.
Okay.
But they immediately rectified it. So,
well, something else to look forward to. Hey, Kyle. So, did you drive anything else this week besides? I know you were carving some canyons up in California yesterday.
So, we're actually going to do that today. So, we have a few EV friends, Zach, who you know, Dominic, a few other people are going to meet us this afternoon. And Angeles Crest Highway is actually closed because of the rainwater is damaging the road. And it sounds like it might be closed for months on end. Wow. Good thing there's other roads in the area. I mean, that's really the main one that we typically drive when we're here. But we're going to take the Lucid up in the canyons. We're going to take the Polestar 1 up there. And, man, I haven't spent much time in the Polestar 1. I've driven them many times before. That is such a special car. It is so cool. So I'm really looking forward to ripping that around today. In the canyons, we got to dial up the suspension a little bit. We put it back to comfort mode for the road trip. So we'll dial up the O-leans on that. The Lucid is on the 19-inch aero wheels, the bicycle tires. So we will be going very slow in the canyons because there's zero grip. Naturally, the car is very balanced and actually has pretty good steering. And the highlight of the Lucid is how it drives, in my opinion. But not on these wheels and tires.
Okay. Hey, so you also went to the Peterson Museum yesterday in California. And I don't know if you want to talk about that at all.
Yes, I would love to talk about this. Oh, I didn't realize I would be able to.
Oh, yeah. I don't know why not.
Okay, this is epic. We go to the Peterson Museum in L.A. And forgive some of the noise. I'm just in my hotel lobby. It was the least worst option.
Sure.
And you walk up, first of all, you pull in the garage. They have EVgo DC fast charging. So the Lucid was at like 3% or something like this. So we just put that on the charger. By the way, EVgo has a one-hour charging limit. Unlike all of their units, and it just shuts off after 1 hour.
Okay.
And I think if the car, and they do this to try to get people to move, but here's how it actually happens. The Lucid's got 111 kilowatt hours we can stuff in there, 112, but it's degraded one, I think. We plugged in and like we're using the Wonderbox, we're getting like 43, 44 kilowatts. Like after an hour in the museum, we're only at still like 40%. So I run down and I gotta, leave the museum, unplug, replug in. and that's the best that can happen there. So bit of a shame with the EVgo 1 hour limit.
Right. But the museum itself, though, I guess there's like a lot of interesting vehicles. We had a couple slides up there. We saw some of the EV cars that really kind of started it all. There's the EV1 that was up there. What was that other one? I don't know if you can go back.
T0.
Before we get into those, you walk. Yeah, this.
Oh, okay.
We walk right into the museum and boom, Tesla Semi right up front. And so Tesla sponsored or at least paid to have like the entire first floor be a Tesla museum. And it is the most fascinating, greatest display I've ever seen, really. They have crash test cars in there. They have diagrams of wiring. They have literally the entire electrical architecture of the car spread out around the ceiling. It's so impressive, everything Tesla has done here. So we were in a rush, but I was like, I got to come back and I got to film a video on this because they did such a good job on it. Then, you know, you go downstairs into the vault, which I've been down to many times, and you see one of the three T-Zeros ever made.
Right.
And this is really, you know, the inspiration, I would say, the beginning days of Tesla are linked to this vehicle. Yeah. And next to it, they have Roadster. That's 007, the red one.
Okay.
They have an EV1, of course. They have a Ford Ranger electric. They have
that's electric Ranger beside it there, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, they have two Pininfarina Batistas. They had a Rimac Nevera. They had a whole bunch of stuff. Maybe there was just one Batista, but a whole bunch. They, of course, had the Cybertruck doing the Carolina Squad. I believe that's Roadster number one. That's the first series production Tesla ever made. And I love that it came on Advan sort of hardcore tires.
Number two? Oh, maybe Martin's was number two then. He had the orange and gray one.
This one was VIN lots of zeros one.
Okay.
And it was just so cool to experience all of this and see everything. They have the 4680 cells with the battery pack architecture explaining the cooling. They have the jelly rolls all pulled out as well. And I got to make a whole video tour. It was just one of the coolest things ever. So, yep, that was the Tesla display. Then you go downstairs in the vault. Lots of weird, cool electric motorcycles, like crazy stuff. Of course, the combustion things are amazing as well and just absolutely insane. And really impressed with that. Like the thing with the Peterson is if you're into cars, you have to go because it satisfies any generation of car enthusiast. They have pre-war stuff. They have, you know, 50s, 60s. They have modern combustion supercars like Bugatti Chirons and Lamborghini Chirons and a whole bunch of crazy stuff. And what's crazy is that T0 downstairs is one of three, right? And then you go upstairs and they have the other one. Oh. And I say the other one because the third one burned down in a fire in Arizona. So they have literally the world supply of T-Zeros in this one building. It's crazy.
Wow. Top speed, 120 miles an hour, 120 miles of range estimated. Yeah, it's like the very beginnings really of the lithium cars. I guess the Nissan Altra was a lithium car around that same period that was leased up, but it was only like a few dozen copies of that made it to the US. But
yeah, but 25 years ago is fantastic. I like this. The vehicle to grid system is the first ever fitted to a T0. Like, I love that.
Right?
25 years we've been talking about vehicle to something and we haven't nailed it yet. Come on,
right? Yeah, AC, my goodness, Wilson has had it going on for sure.
Well, that's the thing. A lot of people don't realize AC propulsion was like the beginning of this whole wave of electric vehicles. Now they were working out in California and they put out the T0. That was the inspiration for Tesla even, you know, becoming a car company because it was like a proof of concept. They also were converting vehicles to electric vehicles. And that was AC propulsion developed the powertrain for the Mini E, the vehicle that I drove, that BMW used for their pilot program back in 2008. So they were the people making electric vehicle technology back in the early and mid 2000s. Nobody else was doing what they were doing, and you know they should get a lot of credit for where we are today. They were like the father of this second latest wave of electric vehicles.
They also did conversions of the Scion XB, the first generation Scion XB, the box basically.
Yeah, they made it the E-Box.
E-Box, right.
Yeah, I sat in one of those. I didn't drive it, but I sat in one of those.
Same, yeah. My sister has an XB and like that first gen, and you know, it really could use an electric drivetrain. I really wish there was something like that available for it, because that'd be great.
Oh, it was cool. That conversion, they were using the same powertrain that the same power electronics that was in the Mini E.
Right.
And it was capable of vehicle to grid. Now, you know, of course, BMW, you know, wouldn't allow the vehicle to be capable to vehicle to grid, the Mini E, but it had the smarts in it that it could have if they wanted to back in, you know, 15 years ago, you know, so they were way ahead of the curve, AC propulsion, you know, but once the big guys got involved and car companies started really investing billions into it, they no longer could really remain relevant. They just didn't have the funds and the backing, but their technology launched Tesla.
Yeah. I mean, they even had some star power. I think Tom Hanks had an E-Box, but Kyle, getting back to you, you had another video up this week I wanted to mention real quick, or talk about just a little bit. So you put up a video of a portable battery that you had on site. I was just wondering if you could give us a couple specs and like how much energy it holds and how much it weighs, and then what you think of it so far. I don't imagine you had that much time to spend with it yet.
Yeah, I mean, this is it's the Zender V something 4600, I think, Super Base V. And yeah, pretty cool. You know, it's something where I'm a car enthusiast. So it's like my first time now branching into solar, branching into mobile battery storage or stationary energy storage. This is all new for me. My world comes from cars. And because I've gotten into EVs, I've gotten into energy related products, which I think our audience is into as well. So this company offered to send us this to play around with. And I was like, yeah, I'll play around with it. And I'll make a little video and, you know, we'll see how it goes. And I think the audience seems to like it quite a bit. It's 6.5 kilowatt hours, roughly, can output 3.8 kilowatts. You can expand the system as much as you want. So I have some extra batteries that I didn't show that I'll use for some other testing as well. Okay. I mean, it's not light. It's heavy. It's 140 pounds, 135 pounds. Alyssa can lift it in and out of the Rivian, but she's like, full struggle. Me too. I mean, it's really,
you know, that's really
heavy. This is like, mobile might be a bit extreme, but once you get it on the ground, you drive it around with a remote control on your phone, or you can just wheel it. But it's kind of fun to just, you know, drive it like a little RC car. Right. And it's been pretty great. You know, just give me 1 second. I'm going to try to move out of the hotel lobby here.
Sure. So, Tom, you also had like a mobile like a battery like this that you tested. Was it like a similar size of weight, you think?
Yeah, I think it weighed 108 pounds. It was right over 100 pounds. And to me, it was too much to pick up and put in your vehicle. Right. You know, I mean, I don't have I have a bad back. I've had a couple of back surgeries. I'm not lifting 100 pounds up to my chest level to put it in the back of a pickup truck or something. It had wheels just like that. I can't believe the name of it's escaping me now. I have a video up on it on my site. It doesn't drive itself like that. I mean, that's a kind of...
That's awesome.
A cool parlor trick, but I don't know how needed that is when you have a handle with wheels. But, you know, it's, you know, these things, in my opinion, at least, they're fantastic for your home and for camping and for, you know, power outages and things like that. You could run your refrigerator. You could run a whole bunch of things on it. But the way we are right now, they just don't store enough energy to make much of a difference with a car. Now, I know, I think Kyle said 3 or 4 kilowatt hours. What did he say?
I think it was like 6.
Was it like six? The problem is the weight penalty of carrying lugging this thing around with you all the time. Like, so a lot of people ask me for, well, do you have a solution? I want something like this. I want to put it in my trunk, you know, in case I ever run out. And the fact of the matter is, you know, EcoFlow, right? Thanks, Greg. The fact of the matter is, lugging this thing around with you all the time for that small use case that you might run out somewhere, in my opinion, is fool's errand. You know, you're better off carrying a 120 volt portable charger because you could plug into 120 volt out. Yeah, you're going to charge slower, but rather than lug around 150 pounds with you everywhere you go, just in case I might run out. You know what I mean? So these are getting smaller. They're getting better. They're charging quicker, but where we are right now, I think that this thing is much better suited for using it at home during power outages, camping, things like that, rather than lugging it around in case you run out with your EV.
Oh, yeah.
There's no reason you should ever keep this in the back of your car.
No.
Right.
That is like really dumb. But I will say there's enough use cases, at least for me, where like having portable energy is really unique and cool. And Tom, to your point, the camping thing is number one for us. You guys know we have this Sprinter with, I don't know how many kilowatt hours worth of storage, but we have, I don't know, 8 to 10 kilowatt hours worth of lithium, but our AC rips. And so we don't get a full night of air conditioning. Actually, we only get about 3 or 4 hours before we're out of AC. And when we're in the middle of summer, that's pretty rough. And so carrying this around, we can not quite double, but we could make it through a whole night just with this little unit of having air conditioning. And what's funny is this whole unit is cheaper than adding the equivalent amount of energy to our Sprinter with the batteries from Winnebago. So it's pretty unique. I mean, it's just something we're playing around with. And, you know, I'm into it. We'll figure out what to do. I think we're going to do some range tests and run cars to zero and try charging them up from this and just see how that goes for a little bit. But we don't have a Lightning like Tom where we have, you know, 240 volt power out of our vehicles. But I got to tell you what, Ford with the Pro Power system nailed that. They should have put a NEMA 1450 in the truck. That would have been perfect, I think, rather than their, what do they have, a 620 or they have a 630? They have something
630, weird. I think it is.
Yeah. But like, put a NEMA 1450 in that thing, put one in the front trunk, get rid of all the 110 outlets and just have like an EV charging option. That other cars need to have this. It's so cool. Now Lucid should be coming out pretty soon with a vehicle to vehicle 80 amp capable charging cable for AC charging. So that I'm interested in as well. Hopefully that happens soon while I still have it.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Mm. Nice.
Yeah. I've been pestering them for a while, Kyle, about that. I actually, Peter, back when I had a chance to talk to him out at their factory, promised me last year that I would be the first one to get that. He said, when we have it ready, you're going to be the first one to test it. And, you know, you can come out here, play with it. And I keep every now and then, every few months, pinging them and say, hey, guys, how's that vehicle to vehicle cable coming along? And there's still no end in sight on when it's going to be available. So I'm thinking, you know, that's going to be later more so than sooner, Kyle, unfortunately, but I hope it's available soon.
They just seem to be going pretty slow in terms of the customer touch point stuff. Like Lucid's still a brand new company, and so it's interesting to watch their rollout, but it's also interesting to compare to Rivian, which started around the same time as well. And while the Lucid has gotten quite a few over-the-air software updates, and that process does work really well, and I have to give it props, the Lucid on our run out here had not one glitch with software. Not one. Once we arrived, it started glitching out. But at least on the entire run across the country, not one at all. But the cameras like went offline, which my dad says happens to him all the time. Didn't happen across the U.S. for us. So they've really gotten their software to be much more stable. We did not have many issues, really any issues. And the one thing that I'd like to see them do now that Rivian is doing, if you listen to their head of software, Wasim, he's awesome. I know him and he's just the best. You know, he just did a whole thing at the Rivian event space here in California talking about what Rivian's doing for software. And it's every month they're issuing releases with Easter eggs, with feature enhancements, with cool things and bug fixes. And Lucid really has yet to do a lot of feature enhancements that weren't promised with the vehicle originally. Lane centering, for example, is still relatively new to the vehicle. And that's just getting kind of dialed in, but there's no fun. There's no quirky, you know, enjoyable software bits. It's a very serious car for serious people. And I think they could have a little bit more sense of humor, honestly.
Right.
Well, before we give Rivian too much credit, Kyle, I didn't get the camp kitchen that I ordered. My tonneau cover doesn't work and they're not going to fix it. They're just going to rip it off and put in a manual one. You know, I didn't get to do tank turns. You know, all these things that I was promised when I ordered it. So, you know, both of these, it's hard to start a car company. I'm not going to be too hard on them, but you know, these are things that when I ordered my R1T, I was figuring I was going to have, and it's definitely a part of why I didn't keep the Rivian. If my R1T had the camp kitchen, it might have been a different situation with me keeping it, because I would have used the hell out of that thing. When me and my friends go out, we go out a lot to different campgrounds. And there's this place over here that makes homemade hard cider. They have these like big field and people just kind of park their cars and have barbecues and everything. I'd have that thing out there every weekend pulled out. I mean, I don't think my friends would have let me sell it if it had the camp kitchen, because we'd be using it every weekend. And it, like, you know, so, you know, that Rivian also has some misses to go along with Lucid. But as I said, it's hard to start a company.
And I wasn't saying like Lucid was missing. I was just saying it's a different strategy to take, where definitely Lucid's taking a very serious approach to the cars, it seems. And their software updates have been focused on bug fixes more than feature enhancements. Whereas I'm not sure. I just think their entire electrical architecture, their software architecture, really was bad out of the gate, and they like had to struggle to get it right. And what I'm saying is, just now it feels like the car's really getting right. So starting to enjoy it a lot more than the last one that I sampled.
Right on. Hey Martin, did you drive anything this week?
I spent yesterday in a Polestar 2, which continues to amaze me that the used values here are going down a lot quicker than the Volvo XC40, because it would suit me better than a crossover shaped vehicle. Maybe it's the Polestar name, maybe it's because people don't know that it's associated with Volvo or something. I'm not sure, but I was having a look last night. I love to window shop, and you can pick up a pretty decent, maybe 18 month old car for probably 25% off what somebody paid for that new, which in EV world, that's normal depreciation for a combustion car, right. If not, you know, better. But in EV world, prices have been holding up. Volvo XC40 price is holding up really well. Okay. Very desirable car, by the way. The Polestar, particularly with the long range battery, for some reason, I think that's a real hidden gem if you're looking for that vehicle. Spent yesterday in that, and just doing some driving around, looking at charging, and was about 350 miles from here in Braintree, which is where the big electric forecourt is. I've talked about before. They have 40 chargers under the canopy. They've got the new ABB Terra 360 chargers, the world's fastest, you know, kind of charger for a car without you getting into commercial stuff. And so that's great. It looks great. The new ABB software, I think, is much better now that you can see the charge rate on screen and things like that. So, I was last at Braintree a little while ago. I was there 2 years ago for the launch, and the place still looks new. And so I was there with a friend who is a CEO of a charging company in the US, and he had flown in because he's heard all about it. And so I took him on a tour, and he was really impressed. They've got this big charging facility, and then the shop, the cafe, the meeting room pods, the car had 11 cars there you could test drive. And he says that doesn't happen really in the US. Like, you don't tend to go to places because of dealer laws. So you've got this place where you've got 40 chargers. You've got showers, toilets. They've kept it just looking so good. And there's more. They're about to unveil the one at Gatwick Airport at the end of the year. And they're just doing a really, really good job. Now, they've got a lot of money behind them. They're called GridServe here. And I think they've done 2 or 3 funding rounds. And so, fabulously expensive endeavor. But they've bolted on leasing. So if you're there charging your car and you like the look of a new car, you can go and test drive one. And if you like that, they'll lease you that. So they're obviously making some money that way. I had a couple of cups of coffee, and they're probably about 4 pence each to make. And so they're making some money on that. But okay. I don't know how any of these places like that make money, because it's fabulous. It's brilliant. And really impressed with what GridServe are doing. Yeah, so he was saying that it's very rare. I didn't know this in the US, to go to a venue where there's 11 different brands, and they had Teslas there. They had the Genesis GV60, Ioniq 5. They had the AuraCat, the GWM Great Wall Motor. Really? AuraCat. They had an i4. They had a Cupra Born, and they were saying lots of people turn up, hearing about you can test drive electric cars there in their combustion cars because they're EV curious. So how about that? It's a charging station with 40 plus chargers, And we're seeing people rock up in their petrol cars being like, oh no, our friends told us we can come and test drive an electric car here. And they test drive it, they like it, they can lease it. So this is like Electrify America. I don't know, maybe they do leasing, I don't know. But having these wonderful big stations, all undercover, all with great facilities, and letting you test drive cars while you're there, killing half an hour charging. And if you like it, signing up to a lease. It's impressive. He was really he was impressed by it. I've not asked his permission to say who he is, but he's been around a long time in US charging infrastructure. So he we hired a Polestar 2 from Hertz for the day, and that car continues to impress me.
Okay. Awesome.
Well, Max just got a Polestar 2, one of my colleagues.
That's true.
And he got like Martin was saying, a used one. Don't buy a new one, that's for sure. Go for a used or a CPO Polestar 2 because you can get a relatively fresh car for 20,000 off. I think Max got like 20,000 off MSRP, somewhere around there, and had 6,000 miles.
That's, like new. So, that's basically new. So, like,
yeah, that's the move.
Yeah. So I was just thinking of that concept here. I wonder what if he's thinking, like, because you could maybe make agreements with like in town, like a half a dozen different dealerships to supply a couple cars, you know, to do something like that, and maybe have some sort of, I don't know, it could be another revenue stream of something kind, as well as serve the mission.
Well, he was explaining that, yeah, you could do that, but he would understand that to be a relatively rare thing for competing dealerships within the dealership laws to say, yeah, sure, we'll all pool our cars together and you can try all the different ones and pick your favorite. It tends, and we don't have those dealership laws here, so it's less restrictive, for want of a better word.
Right.
I think you could make that work, Martin, because there's in a lot of cases, there's dealer groups here. Like there's no, like, you know, Kyle's Ford, you know, where, you know, Kyle and his wife own a Ford dealership. Very few of those left in America. That's how the dealerships used to work. But now we have these enormous dealership groups. And I know because I did a lot of dealership training, I had to deal with upper management. And in many cases, they own hundreds and hundreds of dealerships. So if you could make a deal with, you know, Penske, you know, motors, and they own dealers of every single brand. So that you'd say, you know, I'd like, you know, two Polestars, give me, you know, three Chevy Equinox, give me a Ford F-150 Lightning, two Mach-E's, and, you know, and we're going to put them in the fleet. And, you know, we'll obviously leave your business cards in them if somebody wants to buy one of these. I think that's doable, Martin, 100%.
Okay.
Well, I'm surprised. I'm surprised the gentleman that you spoke with didn't bring that up, because I understand why competitors don't want to talk, you know, play nice with each other. But here in the US, so many of the dealers are owned by these enormous groups that just own hundreds, at least dozens of dealerships.
Well, maybe that's the way forward for customer education. Have meetings or have big charging stations where people can come along, see how easy it is to charge a car. And a couple of ambulances came in, and they must have been on their break or something, because I was in the queue for a coffee, and they got out of their ambulances and came in, and they sat down and had a couple of cups of coffee and a bun and stuff. They were on their break, obviously. And it's like, this is really interesting. They've built this amazing facility for EV drivers to charge with. So it's always going to be an available with 40 chargers. There's always going to be a charger, or you're going to wait a minute. And I've never seen it full. But reputation's gone round. This place is really big. It's clean. It's tidy. It's open. That people are pulling in and spending money in the concessions. There's a post office there. There's a magazine and newspaper shop. And they're going to get to see people charging their EV. The people were sort of co-working at this. And I thought it's a really interesting exposure of a positive EV experience, because we complain so much about EV infrastructure, because if we don't, we'd be negligent. When we spot problems, we have to talk about that. But I've been using the one in Norwich a lot, going back to see my father. That's about 200 and something miles. So that's a good distance to get to before the Kona runs out. And I was just charging before I went to go see him. And the layout, everything, they've improved it in Norwich from Braintree. And I can't wait to see the one at Gatwick Airport. That's going to be really, really interesting, because they say they've improved that. And I think all the chargers, all 30 or 40 they're putting in, are the Terra 360s from ABB. And these can have four cables on. Now, I don't like that. So I'm talking to the CEO of GridServe on Tuesday afternoon. Okay. So I can report in next week on the show what he says.
Yeah, that'd be great.
That worries me because I think we're still in a phase where one box, one cable, one space on the ground, painted a different color, canopy over. And I think that says, pull your car in here and charge. I think if you're going to have a charger with either two or four cables coming off it, or you know, up to four, and then cars pulling in all around it, I think you've got to get the signage so well done to say, hey, there might be three cars on this, but there's space for a fourth. Or because, I don't know, like I sometimes charge on dual head units, and some of those are splitting power. Some of them you can only charge on, they've got two CCS cables, but one at a time. Or some of them are CCS and CHAdeMO, and some of those are one at a time, and some of those are dual power, and they halve it, or they power share. So if you're a new EV driver, I think you've got to get the signage absolutely right. I'm sure they've thought of that. But yeah, I'm going to have a chat to him Tuesday, and I'll let you know a GridServe update next week.
And we could, if we want to listen to that interview, where and when will we find that?
It will go out the Saturday after this show next week. So the scoop will be on here on this show. So we'll find out the later. And they got big plans. They want to build loads more of these around the country. If I was anywhere else, I've seen some of the FastNed ones are good, but I'm not sure they've got all the facilities with them. I've seen some around the world like it, but I think it's such a really good model to copy because, you know, often if I'm stopping with the family, I don't want to go somewhere that's out back, you know, and that's the way that the Tesla model worked for a long time because they got the land and it was either free or cheap or just for the privilege of having a Tesla station. But often at night, the lighting was bad or they were in the middle of nowhere. So I'm not complaining because we got superchargers that way. But this is great. It's got facilities. It's clean. It's tidy. I take my wife and my little boy there every day, every time. And by the way, and I would pay more. So I was, you know, saying yesterday, like, I think, was it 69 pence or 79 pence? I know people say it's really expensive. And it is. Yeah, because I know that, you know, some places you can charge sort of 3-4 cents in the US overnight or, you know, the prices are a lot lower. I don't care what I pay when I'm fast charging because I travel so infrequently long distances. I want it reliable and I want it fast. And if I have to pick one of those words, it's reliable. Yes. And if I get the choice of two words, I want reliable and fast. And I'll pay a premium. Because I'm not doing it every day. Look, if you're a traveling salesperson and you're doing 25,000 miles a year, it's different. It sucks that charging is expensive. So I think that's the model going forward.
Yeah. Right on. Martin, is there a way for you to organize the queue if people are waiting to charge? Like I've always wondered on these big sites, you know, how do you figure out who's first, who's next if it's full?
Yeah, there is a bit of an access road in. But it's wide. And so I guess, yeah, you could start to queue on that access road, but
there's no official way to queue, like no take a number, you know, okay. Right. You know, you know, you're holding a card, you're number 10. Okay. You drive around to that open stall because yeah. I hear what you said that, oh, you know, there's always an open stall. That won't always be the case.
Yeah.
And like I see now when I go to this one Electrify America site near me that has 10 chargers, It's almost, I won't say almost always full, 50% of the time it's full. And the most of the time people have it worked out who's next, but every now and then I see a little bit like somebody pulls out just as someone's pulling in and they just pull right in. Meanwhile, a guy across was been sitting there for 20 minutes and then it becomes an issue. So that's something that I think with gas stations, it's very easy. There's a single line that leads up and you just go next. But with EV chargers, they're positioned all differently so that you don't know who's next, who's going to finish. And I think that's going to have to get worked out.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Well, that's, and also I don't know if this is surprising or not, but all of them have, is this the same in the US? They all have credit card readers on the front. There's no like chip scanner. It's just a touch and go reader and there's no app or anything like that. Now, pros and cons to apps, but do all of your chargers have that? Because again, my friend who I was with was here for a day. He had Apple Pay with his US card on it. And he said, let me try this. And he just got his Apple Pay out and touched it and it started charging. His bank didn't call him. It just worked. And again, activating a charge, that needs to be super simple everywhere. And it is here. And I thought, hang on a minute. He was surprised at how quickly that it just worked. So are all the big stuff, like the EA stations, I've never even kind of bothered to check with you guys. Are they as easy to start a charge? You just rock on up, you tap your card and walk away?
They can be. It just depends on what you're using. Certainly they have there's no like physical RFID option for Electrify America. You can program one to your phone wallet. And that's where you plug in the car, tap your wallet, and in theory, that should work pretty well. You can also set up, of course, auto charge plus with EVgo or, I'm trying to think, ISO 15118 plug-in charge.
That's plug-in charge.
Yep, thank you. I could remember the ISO standard, but not,
but not plug-in charge. Yeah.
And that's just a particular portion of ISO 15118 comms, but that's a thing with EA. But with EVgo and ChargePoint, you do get RFID cards that you can tap.
Yeah, I don't mind an RFID
card. You pay like $5 or $10 for them.
Yeah, it doesn't bother me. I have them in the glove box and it's in my little wallet and it's never bothered me, but some people get a bit, I don't know, frustrated with RFID cards.
But Martin, to the point, on Electrify America in particular, using the app to swipe and begin a charging session works a lot better than using the tap to pay or credit card. It just seems like, and to the point where Electrify America told me, please recommend to your followers that they use the app because it has a much higher percentage of success than using the tap to pay or even the credit card reader. I don't know why. It's just the equipment is garbage. That's the only other way I could say it, because you know they if there's multiple ways to do it, but some of the ways work better than other ways. You know that's not how it should work. But
I'm guessing I'm guessing the physical card readers are bought in from a third party.
Yeah, they're NIACS typically.
And then you're integrating, and obviously they do integrate them because you can go buy your groceries fine. But it's just one extra layer.
You can get
layer.
Gas just fine.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Then maybe. Yeah. So you're integrating. It's another layer. But you're right. Actually, yeah, we can get gas fine. So that's not an excuse.
Yeah. But NIACS makes it really difficult for charge point operators to actually handle payment processing on device because, if you want to issue a software update, for example, you got to call NIACS and they're the ones who have to update their reader. And sometimes that goes down. You're always communicating with a third party. Also, I believe Circle K in the US is the only NIACS provider using Circle K's payment processing backend with the front end readers. Everything else is going through their third party. So now you're trying to get their third party to communicate with your backend. And it's kind of a disaster. The actual on terminal payment process in the US, there's some other competitors to NIACS as well, is really not good. But however Circle K implemented it with their own backend using the NIACS front end reader, that seems to be maybe the future of payments here. But NIACS needs to come up with a full weatherproof terminal to put on because they're always just broken, filled with water, and just nasty. Yeah.
Because at gas stations, they're under a canopy.
Well, at some gas stations, most gas stations, sure. Yeah.
Right. EV stations, charging stations need canopies. But we should get on to some news. If y'all ready? Okay. So our first bit of news is the debut of Volkswagen's flagship electric sedan, the ID7. Now, we've had a first drive review up on Inside EVs that was posted maybe like a week ago or so. But that car just officially had its official debut. We could see it. I think when we drove it, it had camouflage on it still. So to give a sense of its size, the ID7 is 195.3 inches long. So that's an inch or so shorter overall than the Mercedes EQE, but it's in that ballpark. It also has the wheelbase is actually 6 inches shorter than the EQE, which I thought was pretty interesting. But there is a fair amount of rear seat room in this. So it has two trim levels, the Pro and Pro S, which get different size batteries. So the Pro gets an 82 kilowatt hour battery that we know over here. It's a 77 kilowatt hour, it's usable. And it has a WLTP range of 382 miles, while the Pro S gets a 91 kilowatt hour battery, 86 kilowatt hours usable. It's rated for 435 miles of WLTP range. But according to our first drive, the US is not getting the big battery version, which seems really strange to me, but just one of the few odd things about this car. So for instance, peak charging power is said to be 170 kilowatts, which seems kind of low for a new flagship vehicle. No expected charging times were given, so it could redeem itself with a crazy good charging curve. high power levels at until a relatively high level of pack charge, but I suspect that it will be very similar to other VW product. But both the Pro and Pro S have a new motor. The APP550 is the internal name, and I'm not sure why Volkswagen is publishing that out, but there it is. The APP550 is what this thing packs. And the rear-wheel drive cars, there's not an all-wheel drive, at least not yet. So it puts out 282 horsepower. That's 210 kilowatts. 0 to 60 times were not given, but safe to say it won't be like blistering quick, but it's got 402 foot-pound of torque, so it's not going to be pokey either. It should get out of its own way pretty well. See, the emphasis here, it seems to be on efficiency. That new motor is more efficient than the old one, I'm hearing. And the drag coefficient is said to be 0.23, which is kind of right in the ballpark of where a lot of vehicles like this sits. The Tesla Model Y, I think, is pretty similar. It has some nice amenities available. It comes standard with an augmented reality heads-up display, but you can option things like 14-way power seats with automatic heating and cooling, and massage with either 10 or 12 air cushions. It's also got optional smart glass roof panel that can be transparent or opaque. In our first drive piece, we guess the base price is $38,000, which I don't know. That sounds super low to me, but I guess we'll see. Kyle, you did a great video. You shot a walk around of this car. So what did you think about this in person? And if I skipped any tech details that you liked, you know, feel free to let us in.
Or feel free to watch the Out of Spec Reviews video.
Yes.
It was pretty neat. I mean, I literally had 15 minutes with the car. So I think Bjorn's already done some testing on it, which I haven't checked out yet, but I really want to watch those videos to see how it does. Probably not worth watching our video when you know, we already have driving reviews on from some Euro outlets and stuff on YouTube. So basically, you can see my first impressions of the car, which is sort of as expected. It's a high quality piece from Volkswagen. I was at the original unveil of the prototype. It's a big car. Something about the styling just doesn't work for me in the back so much, especially after thinking about it. But tons of rear room. The back seat's great. The front seats are wonderful seats, I think. And the new UI, that's the big takeaway for me. I'm pretty sure Volkswagen ID.4 in 2024 is going to receive a refresh. We're going to see this motor. We're going to see this software and hardware package. We're going to see a better sound system in ID.4. I'm pretty sure Volkswagen's already started to communicate that with dealers as well. That's how I've heard about it, through some dealer training stuff. They have done no official communication through media at all. They're like, we're not talking about that. And I'm like, okay, but like, it's happening. So it seems weird that they would start production in Chattanooga and then do a facelift, you know, 1 year after, basically. And that's not all confirmed, but I just think that's going to happen. So the new UI is, at least in my very quick impressions, was great. Very snappy. I mean, that like it almost like seemed like they went out of their way to make it respond instantly to your inputs. And I think that's because of all the complaints we've had with software 3.1 and even 2.5 before that, 2.3, 2.4. So big fan of that. There's a lot of cool features in there that is really neat. It now supports on-route battery preconditioning, which is really great. It tells you your peak charging power at any given time. So you could just be driving down the road and be like, what would it be if I just plug it into a charger now? And it'll just tell you max 165 kilowatts.
Cool.
And it's really...
That's wild.
Yeah. And then it says like, oh, do you want to precondition for maximum charging power? And you say yes. And then it'll be like, okay, we need 7 minutes. And then your charging power will be this. And it just tells you everything. They really nailed it. So
it's amazing.
Like they've been listening to the owners.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it really seems like they browsed the forums and said, wow, people are pissed. Let's fix this. So again, it's a very initial impression. They were rushing me out of the car for 5 minutes. I was getting the video in. And, you know, can't thank them enough for the early opportunity, but I can't wait to drive it. And I hear driving it based off of the initial reviews is great. It should be quiet, should be quite quick and efficient, people are saying as well. So this new drive unit hopefully will be a little bit better. The all-wheel drive version, I wonder if they'll keep that same Magna front motor that they had in the other ones. I have no idea. Would be kind of interesting to see. And overall, yeah, I mean, it's a large electric sedan that's electric. Do people want it? I don't know. Why would you buy this over the refresh ID.4? That's coming.
It depends what the price is. I guess
it's not going to be cheap. It won't get the tax credit. It's going to be right. built in Germany. So oh, that's true. It's $38,000. I mean, if they can do that with all the standard equipment, that's great. But Volkswagen saying like it pretty much comes fully loaded to says, okay, well, they're trying to justify the high starting price that they know they're going to have to slap on. And if it was a low starting price, they probably would have said that right at launch. And so I think it's going to be more expensive than we think, at least is my guess.
Right. I was thinking 50 to 60,000.
Yeah.
Is it too high?
You're in the ballpark. High 40, like a 49 starting, a 51. Okay. Yeah. I think they're going to try and do everything they can to get this thing to start with a four. But I don't think we're seeing a $38,000 car here. I don't know what's going on there.
Yeah, I don't know. I saw a line in our first drive piece that mentioned that number, and like that seems kind of low. I don't know.
Who drove it for the first time? Because I read Motor One's first drive review of it, and basically it was that they just said they couldn't get enough time to figure out the car.
Right. Yeah. It was like I think it said it was a prototype. So
yeah, but like
you know, it's not as reliable as driving the actual vehicle for the road. But I mean, it should be close.
Yeah, but I mean, they wouldn't let you drive something that's not production intent.
Yeah, there could have been
this far along.
There wasn't as much like just driving feel information as I would have expected. But
right, yeah,
we'll find out.
That was my impression as well. I'm like, and it wasn't just the Motor One outlet or others. I was just like, why is no one saying how this car drives?
Right,
like you just let me drive the car around a block, and I can write a million words about every little regen inching piece. Like, what was going on there? I don't know what happened, but it seemed like something weird, not from any particular outlet, happened with the very early reviews of this car. And I'm not sure what it is, but we just didn't get the info we wanted.
Right. Before
we move on to the next thing, let's talk about the efficiency and range on this. 91 kilowatt hour battery pack. I'm assuming that's gross because the 82 is gross.
Yeah, 88 usable or 87 usable.
Yeah, so less than 90 kilowatt hours usable, and they're talking about a WLTP of 435 miles. Right. That would translate to an EPA of like 390. So like that's like 4 miles per kilowatt. I mean, usually maybe my math's off. It's usually about 10 to 13% less EPA. So if someone could do that math quickly, I think it's like 380, 390. Out of an 88 kilowatt hour battery pack, that's crazy efficiency. That's like, better than Tesla efficiency on EPA range rating.
Right. So my understanding, I was trying to pry with the Volkswagen guys. Like when we got there, they're like, you have 15 minutes. I'm like, great. Don't care about anything else except the nerd specs. Hit me with them. And they're like, well, you can get this color and trim. I'm like, I don't care. Tell me about the drivetrain. I got to get this video in. And I was like, they're like, okay, coefficient drags 0.23. I'm like, okay, with what wheels? Oh, we don't know. Okay, your range is this, WLTP. I'm like, which cycle are they going to choose for the EPA? Oh, they're still figuring that out. So, like, I think there's a lot of stuff for our market that they're still trying to piece together. And unfortunately, we didn't get any of the nerd details yet for our market.
Yeah, right. But still, I mean, they can't fudge that. If they're saying 435 WLTP, that gets verified. That's nuts. That's like, this thing is really efficient, and it'll be interesting to see, although we're not going to get the big battery here. I think the smaller battery, what is it? WLTP 385 or something like that.
So but that would kilowatt hours less.
Yeah. That would translate to like 340, 350,
382
which is still crazy. If they can pull that off with a battery pack, that's basically the size of a Model Y's,
My understanding is they're trying to figure out the test cycles and procedures, because you can kind of gamify the EPA rating system. They're trying to figure out the test cycles to get it to show 300 miles in EPA.
Yeah. But you can't gamify WLTP, and they announced those numbers. We've done a lot of work on Inside EVs, not me in particular, of translating how EPA how WLTP translates to EPA. And there's, there's a window there. I think it's between 10 and 13%. Every vehicle falls in that window so at the most, give it a 13% penalty. And that's where it's going to come at least that much, which is great. And Dom, you mentioned before only 170 kilowatt charging. That's for the smaller battery pack. The larger battery pack tops out at 200 kilowatt. So if the charging curve is a straight line, that's fine for a battery pack that's under 100 kilowatt hours, in my opinion.
So right. It should charge, I would think, the same as ID4 with the new battery pack, which we've seen 192 kilowatt peak on, even though it's rated at 170 or 175. Mm-hmm. And the bigger battery just has more modules, so the voltage is a bit higher.
Yeah.
So we might even see like 210, 215 on that battery when it comes time to charge it. I hope I can play around with that one in Europe, because that could be cool. Basically, and Martin knows this, when you drive around Germany, every other car is a Volkswagen company, Arteon or something like that. There's just like a lot of Volkswagen company cars. And that's what this seems like it's built for, because it's relatively high quality. It feels premium on the inside. And it'll be interesting to see what the American market thinks of a sedan. At least it's a hatch in the back. That's really nice.
Yeah, it's got the nice lift back. That'll forgive a multitude of sins.
But they're going to have to price this thing so well, because you can go and lease like a Mercedes EQE for like nothing right now.
Okay. You think it's really up to the this will compete with the EQE?
Well, I think if the EQE is cheaper on price, then they compete.
Oh, yeah. Well, for sure. You know definitely. What I
mean? Like, no, if you look at the sticker price, no. But if you look at the lease price, yeah, they're going to probably go head to head.
Okay. Well, that's something to look out for.
So, Don, before we jump on, I want to point out one thing. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. Kalen said that the Inside EVs article that he's referring to says the difference is up to 22%. I could be misremembering. I thought pretty much all the EVs were somewhere between 10 and 13%. I'm going to have to go back and look at that. That would account for, make this seem a lot more reasonable, but, I know we published that a while ago, and, whatever that says is pretty accurate, because the person who did it wasn't a regular Inside EVs contributor. Somebody else came in and said, look, if I crunch all this data and do an article, will you publish it? And we said, yeah, sure. Go right ahead. So perhaps I misremember it. Won't be the first time.
For me, looking at it, I see 380, whatever, WLTP, I'm thinking 340, 345. Like, just without, I don't really do math really well. I'm just like, looks to me what I think. So we'll see how that does in reality. But yeah, let's talk about this other freaking awesome car that came out this week. So say hello to the Polestar 4. Polestar is billing this as its quickest vehicle yet. It's like a coupified version of the Polestar 3, but there are a fair amount of differences in the powertrain styling. Like, for starters, the Polestar 4 sits on the SPA2 platform, while this 3 sits on the Geely SEA platform. That's the Sustainable Experience Architecture platform. The dual motor version puts out 544 horsepower and 506 pound-feet of torque, and it's said to be able to hit 60 miles an hour in 3.8 seconds. The rear-wheel drive single-motor version of this will offer 272 horsepower with 253 pound-feet of torque. There's a single battery option, 102 kilowatt hours gross. The usable capacity wasn't given, but the range is said to be over 300 miles in the rear-wheel drive version. Peak charging power is 200 kilowatts, and it can AC charge at 22 kilowatts, which is pretty sweet if you have that kind of power coming in your house. It also has bi-directional with V2L capability, or vehicle to load, so you can charge up devices with it. To help the long range version with its efficiency, the front motor disengages when it's in range mode. When you put it in performance mode, you can get all the power from all the motors all the time. Oh, and the dual motor version also has a semi-active suspension, so that should be cool. The controversial bit that people are talking about is the back window, which it doesn't have. It relies on a camera for rear views, which is, yeah, you can see it there on the screen if you're watching this on YouTube. It's just, you got the camera up there, and I'm not sure where the screen, it says it's displayed on the screen. I'm not sure if that's the center screen or if it's got a rear view. Maybe if we see a video of the interior, we can check that out. So interestingly, the Polestar 4 is a lot cheaper than the Polestar 3. This thing is going to move some units, I think. So it starts around $60,000, where the 3 starts at $83,000. So that's a sizable difference. So I love the way this thing looks. Tom, would you kick it out of your driveway for not being as for not being as charging as fast as the IONIQ 5 or being as efficient as the Tesla Model Y?
So I think it looks fantastic. I agree 100%. But before I jump into Polestar, of course, I have a one-track mind. I had to look up the article I was talking about with WLTP conversion. The average, we took 25 cars. The average was 14%. The median was 11%. Okay. So, but the thing is, we have more than one article on this. And so anyway, well, that's what I was referring to, because I knew I couldn't have been that far off. In any event, let's jump back to this. Looks awesome. Don't know if I would kick out the R1S, but this really looks beautiful. I mean, Polestar, they're doing a lot of things right. Their driving dynamics are excellent. I love their styling. The styling I've loved on the Polestar 1 and Polestar 2, every time I've sat in both of those vehicles, it made me want to buy it. And look at how cool that this is for those watching on YouTube. I think they really did a great job with this. I would buy one of these in a heartbeat if I already don't have too many vehicles here.
Right. Like the front end is close to the Polestar 4, but it's this is a little less fussy. There's a little less going on. I think it's a better looking.
I think they nailed it. I think it looks, and even the rear, the rear looks great. And
yeah, I kind of like the rear better too.
I think that looks really like masculine. And just really, really looks great. And from that view, and it's a unique rear, you know, with that long rear deck lid, you know, and not a lot of glass coming. The glass doesn't come far down, but it works, in my opinion. I think that looks fantastic. Love it.
The the rear view mirror, I think, is how you is going to be how they project the. Let me flick along to that. There you go. So it's just a regular. So your eyes will still go up to the same place to see behind the car, but it'll be a projection. Because that's the thing with the rear view mirrors, the wing mirrors on the e-tron Launch Edition and the Honda E. And it's retraining muscle memory, and it is different to looking in a mirror. So but at least this is in the right place and it's the right shape, and you expect it to be in the mirror. It's just the image.
Right,
will be the
some
key.
Some people don't like it so much, but
I'm not keen. But yeah, at least it's in it's in the right place for your eyes to naturally drift up there in an emergency, in a situation where you want to see what's behind you. You're trained to look there, so that's a good thing. It looks gorgeous. The interior is fantastic.
Well, in a regular car, the rear view mirror, there's a lot. You know, the back, the C or D pillars, you know, will be blocking that view. With the camera, you can really get a wide view of everything that's going on behind you. It's kind of, I don't know if it's more safe, but it's definitely a better view, but it's not as intuitive as like direct instant thing of like a mirrored surface gives, right?
Greg Miles, it's the depth perception, which I haven't got used to yet on cameras. I've never quite got on with them. It's the depth perception. Thank you, Greg.
right. Because, I don't know. How do you feel about those cameras, Kyle?
I've never grown to like them. You know, the depth perception is the first thing that throws you off. But secondly, it's especially with side view mirrors. A lot of times I'm like moving my head around a little bit and trying to see, oh, what's just in that corner. And when you do this, the camera is not moving. It's not your face.
Yeah, it's
you
know, true. It's
staying the same.
And okay, so I'm retraining human
looking
thing.
Like an idiot trying to get different angles, and the cameras aren't moving. So I don't know. You know, it's one of those things that sounds really cool on paper. I've yet to experience an implementation that actually works better than traditional glass. And I'll give up the range penalty of having, you know, a few miles less range for maybe a few less accidents per charging session. So this is my opinion, at least. I think, and you guys know how I feel about coupified SUVs. So,
yeah. You don't like that part so much, but I mean, 60s. $60,000-ish. That's going to be so. It might not be eligible for. It won't be eligible for the IRA. Tax credit, right?
Why isn't it going to be built in South Carolina?
Yes, from 2024, which is soon.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So half of that for sure, then, and I'm sure where the batteries come from.
Yeah.
A Chinese battery.
We'll see. Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Okay.
But at least something. And if you lease it, I think you still get the full $7,500.
Sure.
Yeah, that's the Hyundai trick they're using at the minute. So that's
Mercedes as well. Everyone's doing that.
Yeah, everyone's jumping on that leasing bandwagon for sure.
Yeah. Oh, I just seen the time. I know that we lose Tom in about 5 minutes' time, and we're halfway through. So I feel like we should do like a bonus show because there's so much to get through. But I just to flag it in case anything that Tom particularly wants to comment on with either BMW i7s or the treasury credit or anything.
Yeah, let's talk about the treasury credit actually right now, because that's, you know, where you, this is a natural segue into that. So the Treasury Department released it's which vehicles are eligible for the IRA tax credit, either the full $7,500 or the $3,750 amount. So to be eligible, a car has to be manufactured in North America and meet critical mineral sourcing or battery component sourcing requirements. So the big winners here are Tesla, GM, Volkswagen, but Ford gets at least partial credits on three of its electric vehicles. Hey, Martin, could you bring up the Treasury Department's site there? Yeah. I don't know if you can do that real quick or not.
Yep.
But it's laid up really well. You just put in, what do you put in? You put in like the model year you want. So it has a few different ways that you can do this. So you could set it up to look at vehicles when in service on or after April the 18th, 2023, or vehicles that are placed in service after December 31st, 2022, and before April 18th, 2023. There's a whole lot of stuff going on here. The different model years, you can go up to, you know, you can put in 2021 to 2024, starting with and ending with. You can put all the models, all the makes, whatever. So you can have the whole list of everything down here. But, you know, Tesla is obviously the big winner here. With Volkswagen, it's got the ID4s all taken care of, but and a GM actually is like a huge winner, because like next year all their stuff is fully covered under the Cadillac Lyric, the Bolts EUV EV, Silverado EV, the Blazer EV, Equinox EV. It's all recipients of this, and we expect them to have decent prices on those as well. So, I think they're gonna be pretty happy about this. I don't know.
So I'll get the full tax credit on my Bolt whenever it comes.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, I ordered one of those.
That's true. When is, you have no any visibility on that?
The dealer told me 5 months. Okay. I don't even know, when did I order it? February or somewhere? When did you buy your Model 3? Because I ordered it the week you bought your Model 3.
I think that was February. I don't know.
Yeah, I was like, well, if Dom's not going to buy one, damn it, I'm going to.
That's right. And okay, you got it there? No.
I can't find the site you were talking about. So
I'm sorry. This is it. Yeah,
I thought there was a whole list of cars in one place, but yeah. So
you just scroll down here a little bit, then you just click in that little vehicle placed in service after December.
Oh, okay. And then after, so it's model year this year.
The other one, the
I'm so sorry, Nick. It just appears. Yeah,
just go up a little bit. Okay.
There you go. Lyric, Bolt, Trans, all the Fords. Yeah. So that's cool. This is on fueleconomy.gov. This is a really useful, and it tells you whether it's you're getting the full or the half. The Rivians are getting the half. So that's very cool, actually. Great. Yeah, I hadn't seen the site until today.
Right. Yeah. No, I need to put this. I'm gonna put this. So this is a great visual. So I'm gonna put this in sections up on the Inside EVs forum and make a thread so people can find that information real quick. Mm. Without having to punch in all the parameters.
That's very cool.
So really quick, Mike, the car geek, just asked Tom. I saw an article saying New Jersey suspended state incentives. It ran out of money. This happens every year, Mike. The BPU has set aside $10 million every year for, no, $30 million every year for 10 years. It's $300 million set aside for these EV incentives. And what happens is that the fiscal year starts either July 1st or August 1st. I forget when. And it, when it runs out, it runs out. And then it gets funded again next year. So if you don't have a hard order, a signed order for an EV today, that all your dealer already, because you, besides having a signed order, your dealer has to register it with the program. And sometimes they forget and they wait to do it until the customer picks up the car. And now you didn't get the credit. With my Bolt, I made sure the dealer signed the order and sent it to the state back in February when I ordered it. So I'll get that tax credit, that you can reserve your tax credit. So You know, that's how it works. And every year we run out. It's a terribly run program. Great intentions, horrible execution. People don't know if they're going to get a tax credit. They don't know when they go to the dealers. Don't know. It's New Jersey. It's terribly run. And with that, I have to leave. It's 11 o'clock. I've got a Zoom call that I have to be on right at 11. Guys, peace out. Thanks a lot.
Take care.
Have a great weekend, everyone.
We'll see you next week.
Thank you, Tom.
Take care. Someone in the comments just mentioned Tesla's prices have gone back up.
Right. It's just on SNX, I believe.
Today on the after dropping them, didn't they? Or was it the?
Yes,
yeah,
so they dropped them twice this week.
Okay.
Just the past week, prices went down two times.
Car prices change all the time according to what dealer's selling. I don't even know why we bother to mention this, but it's just.
But the yoke is now a $250 option.
To get the yoke,
you have to spend $250.
Oh, great! Really? No one's doing that then.
Yes.
Well, I mean, a lot of people like the yoke. I mean,
no one likes the yoke.
It's just silly.
Until they get it, they like the yoke.
I tell you who likes the yoke. People who bought it and then were trying to convince other people on YouTube videos that they'd made the right choice when they weren't brave enough to go, this sucks.
Yeah, or like Model 3 owners that saw Model S people getting the yoke and then like chopped their steering wheel off and are like, this is magically better. But I'm like, oh my gosh, try and like drift that car and get into an emergency situation. And is the airbag designed for no wheel in the back? Like, I don't know.
The new MG, which is on the list of things to talk about this week, that comes with it as well. But it's like, no, stop it. Yokes. Toyota do it. No, stop it.
Show us that MG, Martin.
Oh, there you go. Look. That'll do.
That is the MG Cyberster EV. And it's just debuted at Shanghai Auto Show. So I have a whole list of different vehicles that we don't have time to talk about here on our list.
Let's show them real quick.
Yeah.
Yeah, real quick. So the BMW i7 came out a year ago. Now they've got the M70 xDrive version with 650 horsepower, 295 miles of range. That's unavailable now. It looks like the i7 looks great.
Most powerful BMW electric car ever made.
Well, actually, the most exciting bit of this is the top model of their 7 Series, which is their top model. So the top model of the top model is an electric car only, which is great.
Good point. Yes. Good point.
Yes. Good on BMW. I mean, yeah.
He chose that tagline. The sedan's max range mode limits its top speed to 56 miles an hour. What does that have to do anything with how powerful and cool this is?
And that is that's their extreme. I need one more mile plus. No one's using that mode. That is their extreme efficiency Eco Plus thing. No one ever uses that.
If I was BMW, I would make a phone call and say, that is really bad. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I mean, well.
Yeah, I wouldn't promote that as, but no, this thing is amazing. It looks brilliant. And it's a car that less of us are going to buy, but I hadn't thought of that. The best car they make, of the best version they make, is electric. That says a lot.
Says a lot. And that, you know, that sort of goes with the theme where they said this generation 7 series was designed electric and then they adapted combustion to it.
Ooh, like it.
Right. So in a similar vein, a nice posh car, 2024 Mercedes Maybach EQS SUV revealed. Now, we have a little walk around video with this. It's actually pretty informative. So it's got a chrome waterfall grill on the front there, a little like the AMG version. On the Mercedes Maybach, but it's the hood of it. It's like they raise it slightly higher, so you don't see the windshield wipers. They're hidden now in this version, which is kind of bizarre. It puts up more power than the regular EQS SUV, and the interior treatment is like next level. It's like just kind of crazy, but I don't know. And they got those huge monoblock wheels on the outside too, which I don't know. I'm sure, Kyle, you like those?
Any monoblock wheel on a Mercedes is just cool with me. Yep.
Right.
I think
this is the uglier version of the car, by the way. Yeah. I think the standard one looks better.
Right.
Just sort of like an extra bit of luxury on top. But so what I didn't realize is what Don was saying, and I found out earlier this week when the car was revealed, is that Maybach do actually resculpted it. There's bits all over the car that are physically different bits of metal. I thought that was, you know, I thought it was like an M badge where stuff's different under the skin or it's a better luxury leather, but it is actually a different car, which is interesting. Right.
Right, like that's so that you can see the hood comes up a little higher than normal. Yeah. It looks I'm not sure how. I want to see how it looks like in person. I know.
Do you know if the wheelbase is longer than the standard EQS SUV?
I don't think so. I think they just took it. They got rid of the third row and pushed the back seats back. So there's a ton of room back in the back seats. Got the champagne flutes. Right. It's like just next level calf massaging, you know. All that.
Nice. If it doesn't have champagne flutes, we're not interested.
I mean, look at this. It's a four-seater. This car is a four-seater, basically. And yeah, because that middle thing in the back seat is not going anywhere. It's just plush. Plush comfort.
Oh, yes. So, we have to review this one thoroughly.
Yeah. So I think that's all I have for the US market, except that Toyota teased some BZ Sport crossover, which and the BZ Flex Space, which, you know, previous production cars, we don't know if they're coming here. We saw the MG Cyberster, which looks like a pretty powerful little sports car, actually, from MG at Shanghai. That's kind of interesting. Smart 3 was revealed in vibrant colors ahead of its 2024 European arrival. So I don't think that's coming here, but it's an interesting looking car. It's also
the most interesting thing about it is apparently the color.
Oh, really?
Well, according to the title, also really funny. Whoever's doing these things are really making me laugh. The debuts in vibrant colors.
Right.
It's absolutely fascinating that people won't think that this is a smart car because people think they know what smart is. But with its Chinese backing now, this is a really big vehicle. It's actually quite a big deal as well.
It's smart's taking on a new direction, and in my opinion, it's getting really interesting. I mean, I'm sort of over the the original smarts that we know and love are going. Which they already pulled out of the US, but
right.
This could be really a good direction for the brand. Things seem pretty high quality. They seem to be like driving pretty nice. So it's going to be an interesting thing to watch unfold. I wonder if eventually they'll relaunch in America.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'd like to see them do that because it's always great to have, you know, as many choices as possible.
Yeah. An ID5 drove past me yesterday, and this is going to be the same size as an ID5. And I read something in one of the motoring press stories around the ID7, which was something along the lines of, you know, Volkswagen continues to make cars which are like brilliantly inoffensive. And then I sat back and I started looking at the ID3 and the ID4 and the ID5 and the ID7. And I was like, oh, I think you're right. Like, I've never thought anything bad about those cars. Right. We had an ID3 in the driveway. It's fantastic. And I was like, oh, I think you're right. Actually, those cars are gloriously inoffensive. And then the ID7 came out and I'm like, oh, and then we've just seen the Polestar and now this thing. And you're like, well, if you own an ID vehicle, you've made a great choice. And it wasn't until I read this sentence that I'm like, actually, if you want something interesting on your driveway, maybe the VW cars. And I know I've said it a long time about the ID3 and the Cupra Born, like buy the Cupra Born because it's brilliantly different. But I'm like, oh, I think they're right. This would be a great alternative to the ID5.
Sure. And is this owned by Geely?
So Geely have put the money. It's not more than 51%, but it's a bunch of money invested. So made by them. Yeah, I think they'll make it.
Right. All right. And the only other car I have on my list here is the 2023 XPeng G6, which we say is probably the brand's most important model yet. I'm hoping actually that one or more of us can go to China actually and test this thing out. I don't know if there's been some rumblings of a possibility of that kind of thing happening.
We all need to go.
I kind of like the way this, it reminds me of the Cayenne for some reason. I'm not sure why.
It's like just the Cayenne shape. Coupe and then F pace in the rear with those taillights.
Yes. Right. Yeah. You know I mean? Pulls it. Pulls. Yeah.
Go back one image and you can just see that Jag influence of the rear light ripping around the back. Yeah. That's all Jag. The roof line's all Cayenne coupe.
Okay. That's what I'm saying. I don't know. I just looked at it and it's like, because the front end doesn't look like that at all. The front end's got its own thing going on, but they got those fold flat seats in the front.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah, XPeng's got, it's an interesting company. It's got some interesting
products. They got a Sporkle steering wheel.
No, I don't like that.
Yeah, I'm not sure about the steering wheel. It looks like you can't put your hand through the bottom rung. I can't tell.
Oh, looked, I bet you could. Really? It looks, did they block that off?
Oh, okay. No, maybe it's open. Maybe it's just a photograph.
It looks kind of like E.T.
I don't know why I just not go around, but okay. Like, round works really well. You know, but anyway, I think that brings us to the end of our show, though. I think
I need to justify, like, that's E.T. and that's the steering wheel.
You're so right. Well, now we know where they get their design inspiration from.
Okay, so I tried to defend myself. I'm not sure I did a good job. I'm going to stop talking.
Perfect. That's great.
That's awesome. Yep. So that brings us to the end of our show. If you have any questions or comments, you can leave them on the Inside EVs Forum podcast thread or on our YouTube or Twitch comment sections. If you like the show, please give us a thumbs up if you're watching us on YouTube. Don't forget, you can follow our panelists on Twitter. You can find Martin at EV News Daily. Tom is at Tomlog. That's with two M's. Kyle Connor is at It's Kyle Connor. And I'm on post.news at Dominic. So click subscribe, tap that bell icon for notifications, and thank you very much for joining us, and we'll see you all again next week. Ciao.